Chapter 2. After dinner, Emery washed the dishes and Cianne hurried upstairs to her room, phosphorus in hand, to break her bond to fire. She resealed herself to paper while stroking Fennel's hairless body, then took out her rubber buttons for examination. She wanted to use them to create sturdy padding for Fennel's paws. They were close to the right size, so hopefully she wouldn't have to manipulate the material too much. She could hardly ask for Emery's assistance in such a task. She paused, rubber in hand. Did she really have time to be doing this? After learning the secrets of bond-breaking in Magician Avioski's home nearly 2 years ago, a secret only she knew, Cianne had awoken in a hospital bed. Her body, which had been sliced open like a Christmas turkey, was intact, having been healed by an exciner. The magician who'd saved her life was legally sanctioned to work with his material, but the idea of anyone using blood magic on her was horrifying, particularly at that time, only moments after she'd watched an exciner murder her dear friend. She had awoken as a gaffer, a glass magician, having changed her material to save her life. After rebonding herself to paper, she had forced herself to forget Grath's bizarre magic for 2 months. But hers was a mind that couldn't forget. She remembered everything, down to the most minute detail. Her first spelling test in the 5th grade, the recipe for kidney pie, even what Magician Avioski had been wearing down to the shoe buckles the first time Cianne met her on September 18th, 1901. She remembered the way Magician Avioski's body had hung from the rafters of her house, her wrists swollen and her head lolled to one side. She remembered every piece of glass that had cut through her own skin. She felt them slicing through her now and shivered, rubbing the goose flesh away. And she remembered the terrified look in her friend Delilah's eyes well enough that, had she any skill in drawing, she could sketch it blindfolded. So she knew exactly how Grath Cobalt had broken and resealed his bonds to become an exciner. She had told Emery about her new ability in the hospital, proved it, even, without sharing the details. He had never asked for them. What little knowledge he possessed about her ability to shift materials had not sat comfortably. Understandable. Cianne had more or less achieved the equivalent of breaking gravity. She hadn't shared her desire to delve into the other magics, what with their newfound relationship being as precarious as it was. Initially, she'd planned to never test her new unwanted knowledge, and she'd allowed him to think she still felt that way. While she didn't think he would judge her, she couldn't stomach the thought of disappointing him. So, a secret it had stayed. At first, she set strict rules for herself. No studies in other materials magics until her folding studies had been completed, along with all her other duties as an apprentice. She'd only broken her rule a few times, for spells too alluring and interesting to pass up, like enchanting bullets or altering her image in a mirror's reflection. But now, with the test for her magicianship only a month away, could she really spare time to adhere rubber to her paper pup's paws? She closed her fingers around the rubber buttons. A part of her knew she was ready. She knew how to mold and animate creatures made of dozens of pieces of paper. She knew how to create the most obtuse paper illusions, how to construct 54 different paper chains, and how to make paper vibrate so quickly it exploded. She could probably teach her own apprentice. But still, Cianne didn't know what she would be tested on, or how. Emery claimed he could not reveal any details about the testing process. For that reason alone, Cianne knew she should study harder. Study folding. Study every possible angle of paper magic. Any articles or essays that might be new to her, even if the content wasn't. With a sigh, she set down the rubber buttons. She still had leisure time. There would be the opportunity to upgrade Fennel then. Glancing up, Cianne peered out her window, which was half concealed by the branches of an alder tree. A brilliant pink highlighted the tree's leaves, and the sky beyond looked lavender. Tucking back that stray piece of hair, Sini walked to the library, where the window was broader and unskewed. The view was beautiful. Sini had never appreciated sunsets until becoming a folding apprentice. Her home in the mill squats had been surrounded by tall buildings, which blocked out the horizon and most of the sky. At Tagus Prath, despite having a room on the 6th floor of the student tower, she'd always been too focused on her endless mounds of homework to give heed to the palette of the setting sun. Here at the cottage, where city met country, where no other people or architecture could obstruct her vision, Sienny had discovered the allure of sunsets. Tonight, several chunky clouds haloed the sun, acting as canvas to its dying light. They glowed a bright apricot where they were closest to the cap of gold descending beyond the hills, turning salmon and violet farther out until they met the deepening azure of the evening sky. The clouds looked like ethereal creatures, skyfish swimming across the blue expanse, following the sun to the other side of the world. A hand settled on her shoulder, just at the base of her neck, pulling Sienny from the mural beyond the glass.
"How hopelessly romantic,"
Emery said, the corner of his lip tugging upward almost enough to make a dimple. His eyes took on a more olive hue in the window's light. His fingers felt cold from the dishwater.
"Just like the novels,"
Sini agreed, stepping back into his arm and leaning against him.
"The same thought occurred to me. I was rather hoping we could recreate a scene from Jane Eyre."
"I admit I'm ignorant on that one."
"Quite good," she says. "In a sad way, but it ends well."
Emery turned toward her and lifted his hand to her jaw.
"As long as it ends well,"
he said. He ran his thumb along her cheek and studied her for a moment, his gem-like eyes gliding over her mouth, her cheekbones, her eyes. Sini loved it when he looked at her like that. It made her feel present. She stood on her toes, and Emery closed the rest of the space between them, touching his lips to hers. Despite her keen memory, Sienny couldn't recall how many times she'd kissed Emery Thane since that day outside the train station nearly 2 years ago. Many times, yet the feel of his mouth still filled her with childish delight, still made her blood course faster. Perhaps too fast. Her fingers danced up his neck and over his earlobes, traced the length of his sideburns and the day's worth of stubble that bordered them. The smells of him, brown sugar, stationery, charcoal, filled her lungs as she broke for a breath. Then she kissed him the way a lady should never kiss a man to whom she was not wed. The tip of his tongue slid over her bottom lip, but he wouldn't oblige for long. Sometimes Sienny wished he would forget she was a lady. He certainly never forgot he was a gentleman, no matter how hard Sienny tried to coax the rogue out of him. Her back met a bookshelf. She curled a lock of Emery's hair around her pinky, enticing him further. It worked for a moment. A second, really, before the kiss began to slow, Emery reining himself in, as always. Kisses like these could lead to other things, especially in a house where the only possible interruption came in the form of a paper dog. But Emery, noble Emery, would not do other things with Sienny outside the bond of matrimony, and he wouldn't marry her so long as she held the title of apprentice. He had said so himself, twice. All the more reason for her to test for her magicianship as soon as possible. They broke apart, their breaths spanning the short distance between them. Sienny opened her eyes.
"Yes, just like in the novels," she whispered.
Emery chuckled, then kissed her forehead.
"These books you're reading. I question your taste, Miss Twill."
She straightened the collar of his maroon coat.
"I'll read what I please, Mr. Thane."
"I have a suggestion,"
he said with a wry smile, stepping away and glancing back at the sunset, which had already grown ruddier.
"I have a dissertation on 18th century folding basics on interlibrary loan. It's wonderfully dry, and has all its nouns capitalized. I think you'll enjoy it."
Sienny frowned.
You want me to study primitive folding techniques?
Only sub-primitive,
he said, a smirk playing on his lips.
It never hurts to go back to basics, even if you think you know them.
I do know them.
Are you sure?
Sini paused.
Is this a hint for my test?
Emery stuck his hands in his trouser pockets.
I am not allowed to give you any hints, Sini. I wouldn't dare jeopardize your passing.
His tone grew a little more serious on that last sentence. Stepping over to the table against the west wall, he patted his hand on a worn book as thick as Sienny's wrist. Her shoulders slumped. Surely this tome wouldn't help her win her magicianship. But she was not any more willing to risk her chances of passing than Emery was. Sighing, louder than necessary, Sienny grasped the heavy volume in both hands and heaved it onto her hip. The telegraph on the table began tapping. Emery raised an eyebrow. Sienny held still and listened intently, translating the Morse code in her head.
An interesting query. I accept.
Study hard,
Emery said with a hand on her back. He pushed her toward the hallway.
But what about?
His eyes brightened.
It's a secret, dearest.
And with that, he shut the library door. Sienny frowned, then pressed her ear to the wood, trying to make out the sound of the telegraph. 2 seconds later, Emery pounded against the door. He had already learned all her eavesdropping tactics during their time together. Frowning, Sienny retreated to her bedroom and cracked open the dissertation, waving away the dust that spun up from its thick cover.
Chapter 1, The Half-Point Fold.
It was going to be a long night. The clouds thickened after the sunset, veiling the night stars. By the time Sienny turned off her lamp to go to sleep, rain had begun to fall. It came first as a sprinkle, then a shower. A gale picked up and woke Sienny as it whistled through the eaves, ripping bits of paper illusion spells from the walls and fence. No amount of waterproofing could save the spells from a squall like this one. As the night grew colder, rain turned to hail. It clacked against the roof and window like 1,000 telegraphed messages. Covering her head with her pillow, Sienny returned to her slumber. Rain surrounded her in her bedroom, pouring down through a vanished roof, pelting the furniture and peeling paper art from the walls. Sienny stood in the middle of the room in a black skirt and white button-up shirt with a gray ascot about her neck, her student uniform from the Tagus Praff School for the Magically Inclined. She stood over a drain in the floor, but something was clogging it. Rainwater puddled about her feet, and she smashed her shoe into the drain over and over, trying to force the water down. The obstruction wouldn't budge. She turned, but couldn't find the door to the room. The furniture had vanished as well, leaving her with only wood and rain. Raindrops grew in size, falling now like long quilting needles, splashing against her skin, dribbling from her uniform into the growing lake about her legs. The cold water climbed up her knees, her thighs. Sini's heart seized. She frantically waded through the dark water, searching for something to stand on, but found nothing. No desk, no bed, no ladder or stool, no doors anywhere. Even the windowsill had vanished beneath the beating storm.
Help!
She cried, but her voice couldn't pierce the racket of the percussing rain. It beat into her harder and harder, prodding her like shards of glass. Water surged over her hips, her navel. She couldn't swim. She tried to float, tried to push her pelvis toward the sky as Emery had instructed her the one time he tried to teach her, but she only sank. Her head went below the water. She flailed, kicked off the floor to come back up. Breaking through the water's surface, she heard someone cry,
Sioni!
She turned toward the voice, splashing in the water, desperately trying to keep air in her lungs. And there she was. Delilah, sitting atop a bookshelf, floating on its side, reaching her hand out toward Sioni. In her other hand, she clutched the compact mirror she'd given Sioni for her 20th birthday, its embellished Celtic knot pressed into her palm.
Swim!
Delilah shouted.
I can't!
Cianne cried. Water lapped into her mouth and she coughed. Her toes sought the floorboards, but they had vanished. Everything had vanished but the water and the rain. She was drowning in an endless ocean, no land in sight. Delilah reached her hand out farther.
Hurry!
She cried. Cianne kicked and paddled, reaching once, twice, for Delilah's fingers. On the third attempt, she caught Delilah's wrist. But Delilah frowned. Her brown eyes rolled back into her head, and Cianne stared in horror as Delilah's arm fragmented from her body in uneven pieces, drizzling blood into the water. Cianne screamed as the rest of her friend disassembled like a broken mannequin until the only tangible trace of her was a scarlet mess atop a sinking bookshelf. Cianne gasped and sat up in bed, her pillow toppling to the floor. She blinked several times, taking in her dry room, listening to the patter of rain against her window. The hail had stopped. Dragging the back of her hand across her forehead, Cianne took a deep breath, listening to the thrumming of her pulse in her ears. Her neck pounded with blood. Blood. She threw back her blankets, searching beneath them for something. Anything. She scanned the room, empty save for where Fennel slept on the desk chair. Another deep breath, and another, but still her pulse hammered. She stood and paced to the other side of her room and back, running her hands over her messy braid. She hadn't had a nightmare like that for months. She hated it when they felt so real. Tears threatened her eyes, so Cianne looked up at the ceiling and blinked rapidly, urging them away. She hadn't made it to Delilah's funeral, being unconscious in a hospital bed. But Clemson, the pyre apprentice she'd met at the factory tour, later told her it had rained. Light flashed outside her window, followed by thunder almost as loud as the beating of her heart. Cianne stared at the mess of her bed, then at Fennel. She swallowed, stood, waited, stared. She picked up her pillow and padded to her door, cracking it open. Peered down the dark hallway. The dimmest candlelight shone from behind the farthest door on the right. Emery never had invested in magicked lamps. Chewing on her bottom lip, Cianne moved toward it. She adjusted her nightgown and knocked, soft as her trembling fingers could manage. She didn't want to wake him if he had already...
Yes?
His voice said through the door.
How late was it for him to still be awake?
She cracked the door open. Emery lay in his bed, covers up to his hips, reading, but he reached over and set the book down on his nightstand. His candle only had a half inch of wax left to burn. She had caught him just in time. His eyes met hers, and his forehead wrinkled.
Are you all right, Cianne?
She flushed, feeling like a child.
I'm sorry, I just... Can I sleep on your floor?
His expression didn't change. He sat up.
Are you ill?
He asked, ready to stand.
I'm not sleeping well. Again,
she admitted.
I'll be quiet. I don't want to sleep alone. Not tonight.
Please. His lips pressed together. He knew about her nightmares. They had been awful after Delilah died. After her murder. Cianne had slept with a light on for 3 weeks. They came infrequently now, but when they did come, Cianne dreamed with a vengeance. He gestured for her to come, and Cianne stepped into the room.
I'm sorry,
Cianne,
he said softly.
Don't apologize.
He pulled back his covers and scooted over, making room for one more. She hesitated. She had never slept in Emery's bed before, but she yearned for company, yearned for him. A paper chain she could neither see nor touch pulled her toward him, and the spell to stop it was the only one she didn't know. She plopped her pillow down beside his and crawled onto the mattress. Emery snuffed the candle with his thumb, and lay down on his side, looping one arm around Sienna's waist, holding her against his chest.
So warm.
Sienna relaxed into the embrace, listened to Emery's familiar heartbeat, his calm breathing, matched her breaths to his. Gradually, the images of her nightmare faded from her mind, and Sienna fell into a safe and dreamless sleep.